A recent Gillette advertisement on the best a man can get highlights the various ways that men interact with the Me Too movement, pointing to acts of sexual harassment, bullying, and other typically male-centric behaviors. GLT's Mary Cullen speaks with ISU Women's and Gender Studies professor Tanya Diaz-Kozlowski about the conversations around toxic masculinity.
The internet ad has received both positive and negative feedback, some on social media calling it insulting to men for falling into the trap of typical stereotypes, some men going as far as throwing away their Gillette shaving products. So what's your take on this whole Gillette ad controversy?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. I think we're in a moment right now where the world is continually trying to figure out what it means to be an activist. Like, how do we do activism, if you will? And so I think the ad really speaks to, like, what are the political consequences of civic engagement and activism being defined by the logics of a marketplace? We've been here before. You know, we have other companies that have been engaging with the public about what does it mean to be a person and a consumer, you know? So this isn't new per se, but I think the way that people are engaging in the conversation, particularly that we have all of this new media and a new generation, right, who is engaging with activism, that really needs to be taken into consideration when we talk about what is the Gillette ad and what is it doing? Because Gillette's a company. Their goal is to make money. Now, that doesn't mean that what they're doing is bad. That also doesn't mean what they're doing is good. So I think one of the things we need to be really cognizant of is how to frame the conversation of what we're doing so that we don't alienate folks. Because really saying, is it good or bad? Are you for it? Are you against it? That's a moot point. That's very dichotomous thinking. I think to say, oh, it's really dramatic to throw your razors away, or, oh, this is the best thing ever, really limits the kind of discussions that we should be having. And then how are we going to continue to have these conversations about toxic masculinity and patriarchy and how all people participate in patriarchy? Because it's a sociopolitical system. It's not an individual man or a group of men. Now, do men participate in patriarchy? Yes, they do. Is toxic masculinity problematic? Yes, it is. Now, again, if you're offended by Gillette in their commercial, then I'm a little concerned because the ad itself is trying to speak to men in particular by saying, hey, who are we as a group? We need to recognize these things.
And so these conversations that people either are having or might be having about the Gillette ad and the conversation about how to tackle toxic masculinity in all forms and the patriarchy in all forms, how do you see people starting that conversation? Say, you know, there's a lot of negative energy out there, not just about the Gillette ad, but just toxic masculinity in general. And it tends to be a very attacking term for some males. And so how do you see an appropriate conversation on such a hot button topic?
Well, there's no one approach. Context is really important. Again, like I tell my students, I think that we have really interesting opportunities now because of technology, Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr and all these other social media forums. I don't think they're a primary place to have really meaningful, ongoing conversations because it's limited. So, you know, you're going to start with your top five. I like to say, you know, tell me who your top five people are. And so who do you surround yourself with? And those people you're going to have conversations with, you know, your peer groups, the organizations that you belong to, when you go out for dinner with folks, who is in your family, who are your friends. You know, we see, who do you go to the gym with? Do you play intramurals? Do you have kids? Do you go to the daycare? All of these sort of places that we interact with each other, we can have little conversations, right? But having longer, sort of more in-depth conversations with folks you might be in a more platonic or romantic relationship with, I think that's where we see sort of this deeper level, as well as, again, the opportunity, whether it's in the community, at a community center, whether it's at a community college or university, or at your church, to have conversations about what does it mean to be a gendered human being in society in 2019. Those are really meaningful. Again, our educational institutions have an array of resources where folks can come in that have been studying this, that know what toxic masculinity is. It's not just a word that was made up by feminists, right? Or to say, like, feminism is a bad word. It's not a bad word, but it's been stigmatized. So we have to be able to confront language, right? But we also have to look at the power relationships and who gets to decide what the language is. And so that's really important, number one, to start with vocabulary. We have to be able to say, okay, like the way you've been operating, you think feminism is XYZ. Feminism is the collective struggle to end sexist oppression. So you can identify individually as a feminist, or you can advocate feminism. But then you have to admit sexism exists. And a lot of people don't know what it is, or they may feel it, but they don't have, again, the vocabulary to talk about it. So then it just becomes something that is a buzzword, and it doesn't get interrogated. And then it just stays on a very individual level. And we have to find better places for us to be able to talk about it and make some difficult decisions.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mary Cullen speaking with Dr. Tanya Diaz-Kozlowski. She's an ISU professor in the Women's and Gender Studies program. So the Gillette ad actually came out right after the American Psychological Association released their first ever guidelines for treating male clients. Mm-hmm. So that's clients who are going in to seek psychological help. Mm-hmm. In essence, it's basically calling out the implications of toxic masculinity and the patriarchy on the mental health of men. Mm-hmm. And report says that men are benefiting from the patriarchy, but they're also impinged upon it. So for mm-hmm. starters, could I have you define what even is the patriarchy?
Okay. Patriarchy, I'm using bell hooks. She's a Black feminist scholar. So patriarchy is a sociopolitical system that insists that males are inherently dominating, superior to everything and everyone deemed weak, especially women, and endowed with the right to dominate through violence. So we can see from that definition that that is extremely negative, but there's some really key pieces to that. Number one would be the male-centeredness. The second would be control, and then the third would be domination. So, and then it's a sociopolitical system. So it's not just a group of guys that are like, oh, I'm going to do this. It inherently benefits men, right? So that's something that, again, you have to face whether you like it or not, you're a part of this. So women also enact patriarchy because we internalize these things, right? So we have to unlearn things. So patriarchy gives us this system, and it informs how we understand ourselves as a gendered being in the world, and then how we create relationships with one another, right? So I think what the APA is trying to do, although I have to throw a little shade, they're a little late to the party. I think they're trying to engage in this because, I mean, their first paragraph, their statistics, that should be very concerning to every person on earth, that men commit 90% of homicides. But again, women of color and women of color feminists know this. We have been saying this for years and trying to get men involved in the, anti-gender violence movement, because we know that the majority of people who are committing violence are men. And that includes little boys and little girls and folks of all genders are often suffering at the hands of older adult males. So rather than saying, well, how can we protect women and how can we have more emergency lights on the quad and, you know, let's do a safe walk program, we need to be interrogating why is it that the majority of the violent crime is being committed by men? And if you don't have the vocabulary and you're kind of like feel attacked in that way, that's a good indicator, right, that you're like, wow, there's something going on that I don't have the vocabulary for and I feel like maybe this has something to do with me. Maybe you need to be engaging it in a different way and a healthier way. And maybe you should sit back and listen and have some empathy. You know, you don't see women throwing away their razors or saying, we're not going to do these things. But we also get messages about what it means to be a woman in this society and what that means. And it's also harmful for us. And so I think that's really important to recognize. And I think the APA, they're trying their best. But there's some things, you know, they don't define patriarchy in the article. They don't define sexism. And then they also don't define what toxic masculinity is.
That was exactly my next question. How would you define toxic masculinity?
So again, toxic masculinity is also kind of a like everyday, like colloquial term for hegemonic masculinity. Mm-hmm. So hegemonic is just like a bougie word for power and dominant, you know? So if you want to be fancy and you're at a party, you'd be like, that hegemonic masculinity is just crap. You know, what's up with that? And so there's really four pieces to it. And the first one is repudiating the feminine, okay? The second would be the sexual objectification of women. The third would be that men are socialized to think and know that they cannot and should not express emotions. But when they do express those emotions, it's in a violent and unhealthy manner and an explosion, if you will. There's certain parameters when it's all right for men to show emotion, but that's very, very guarded. There's a specific criterion for that. And then the last thing is to maintain gender subordination. right? And so there's this relationship between men and women in particular, where women are, again, if we think about sexism, a set of beliefs that says that women are devalued and men are privileged. The gender subordination allows that relationship to be naturalized and normal, right? So something really simple, for example, that seems harmless, like, oh, I'm going to walk through the door and I'm a woman and a man sees me and says, oh, I'll hold the door for you. Now, he's just being nice. He could open the door for me. But underneath that, if we could dig deeper to that, is, well, that's a part of me being that person being a man and saying, I'm going to open the door for you because that's what men should do. And women are inherently inferior and less strong than men. And so these are the practices that we associate to those kinds of behaviors and understanding of ourselves. So in order to break that, again, we have to have the vocabulary, but also be willing to change. Toxic masculinity can be unlearned, but you have to be willing to recognize that this, a man box, if you will, what it does, and that it's actually harmful. It's harmful to people of all genders, but it has different impacts and effects for women than it does for men.
Actually, in that study, it kind of goes along with some of those themes that you mentioned with the pillars of what is toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. So the APA study goes on to say that men are often reluctant to admit vulnerability. Often men are raised to be self-sufficient, like we were just saying, and they shield out any thoughts or emotions that people might define as weak. So in what ways are traditionally feminine behaviors different, and how is the collision of traditionally feminine behaviors compared to traditionally masculine behaviors? How is that collision impacting society?
That's a big question. Well, I think in some of the things that you described, we can see these pieces of patriarchy and how they're embedded. Again, I think for me, it goes back to this notion of, you know, we're raising young people and also policing ourselves as adults, if you will, within this gender binary. And so when you have human beings that do not fit into these neat categories, there's going to be problems. There's going to be unhealthy practices and also violence. So I think the collision is happening on the micro scale and the macro scale, with relationships, large scale sort of people not being able to express themselves, on the large scale in institutions as well. I guess I don't think this collision, as you would put it, has just started. Because again, all people have these different characteristics in what we might describe as masculine and feminine. And so how that is received in the world as we're social beings, that will continually change. You know, like in the 1950s, if a baby was born and then it's assigned a sex and then that becomes a gender status, that baby might have been wrapped in a girl might have been wrapped in a blue blanket. But today, everything that's blue is associated with boys. So we know that these things are socio-historical concepts that will change, and that change because people changed. Right? People made those changes and decisions, and institutions change, so it's a process. So I think the one thing that's underneath that is that we need to continually change and dismantle these things that are unhealthy and have horrible consequences.
If we're having these conversations now, what's the hope for the future?
I think many things. Some things are unknown. But I think, like I tell my students, if you can't imagine the world to be different than it is, it won't be. So that creativity and that imagination and the hope that the world can be a more equitable and just place, that we have to continually use that as a practice and have that, and not like fall into despair or say, oh, it is what it is. I think that we all can kind of get that way, but really we need to continually have hope, as well as put folks that are in positions not just of power, but who can contribute to changing our society to make it more just and equitable.
That was GLT's Mary Cullen addressing the patriarchy with ISU Women's and Gender Studies professor Tanya Diaz-Kozlowski.